things that are happening to me are really God overruling for the highest ends and for my greater good. And it's good, of course, when we can do that, and that is another subject in itself. But he was able to say there in verse 5, "Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me." Didn't feel like it at the time, I'm sure, whenever he was being taken away from everything that was familiar to him and treated like the offscouring of the earth, even by his nearest and dearest. But now when we look at him in this chapter, he's an honored man. He's very successful in what he's doing. He has been raised up. And in all of that, he has lost none of his integrity. And his message for his father is, in verse 9, that God has made him to be Lord over Egypt. Now, I want to say that he did not get to this position through good references or through a fairly flashy CV. But rather, he got to this position he was in the most unusual way, because God used things. God used greed. He used sinful passion. He used forgetfulness. He used envy. He used dreams. He used lies and turned it all around to take Joseph and bring him to a very prominent place in the court of Pharaoh. And a very prominent man there he was in the palace. And all the others involved, I'm sure, were oblivious to the fact that God was overruling towards carrying out his own designs. Sometimes you become discouraged, Christian, and it's easy to lose sight of the fact that God is overruling, that he is overruling. And I can look back at my own Christian life, and many times, certainly sometimes I would have gone another way, but that was the wrong way. Didn't feel really wrong at the time, but looking back now, I would have gone the wrong way. And God overruled in his own divine sovereignty for my greater good. And Joseph was there a man of great standing. And while his brothers had been apart from him for a long time, from here on, from this passage, especially when you read there in verses 18 down through 21, they will be serving him. Do you remember his dream? Way back years ago. And he got himself into trouble because in his naivety, he told his brothers that they would be serving him. It was not a good idea. And it didn't work very well for him. But here, the dream that which the Lord showed him at that time was being fulfilled. They were going to serve him. Now, when you think of that, that was a total change for them. And they would have battled with certain things as they sought to serve him. And folks, we stand at the very beginning of another year, the recommencement of the work yet again. The great opportunity there, and God in his own sovereignty gives us tokens for good along the way, and he does that every year, I believe, for every Christian, everywhere. And yet as we go to serve him now, here in the village, at the beginning of another year, there will be battles. And I've no doubt that I'm talking to people this morning, and some of you have every intention of doing the very best that you can. You want the joy in your heart of knowing, well, whether the Lord visibly prospers my work or not, I will have the joy in knowing that I'm doing my best. And that is your mindset at the moment. And yet there can be battles as you seek to do that. These men were now to serve him. It was a different situation for them. And there were certain things that they would have to overcome, that they would have to face up to. In other words, they would be battling as they sought to serve. And I've given a title this morning, Four Battles When Battling On. And that's what you're intending to do, and we're intending to do as a congregation now as we enter the winter's work again. Four battles when battling on. And in these days, again, I'm saying something here which is obvious to you. It's growing darkness all around us. There's no question about that. Even many who should know better are falling into apostasy and compromise from God's word. And that, of course, is a knock-on effect to everyone that they affect after that, including the boys and girls. And we do not wish to be involved in that in any way. But there will be battles. And I want you to look at this with me, as these men were now told that they're going to have to do to serve Joseph. That was going to be their task here. I want you to see, first of all, the participation here that was required. Their participation that was required. Here's a message from Pharaoh for them. They're to take, verse 18, they're to take your father and your households and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. Now, on the face of it, it seems simple enough, but this was a huge task. They were to go and to get their father and their households and all that they had, and they were to come unto him. I'm sure, even though Joseph had forgiven them for wronging him, that there were those among them who were skeptical. I would have been. If I had been there and was suddenly told by a man whom I had wronged, if you come and do as I say here, I'm going to give you the fat of the man. I'm going to really bless you. I would be skeptical about that. Individuals could have been skeptical. They would have to believe their brother and everything that he said. There would be lots of organization involved here. And how would they do it? Well, if you look in verse 19, it says, now they are commanded this to do. Take you wagons out of the land of Egypt. This is the enabling that was going to be given to them. In providing these wagons, Joseph was really enlarging their capacity, because when they're told to go down and to get their father and to get their families, immediately the cry might go up, sure, there's nothing there. How are we going to do all of this? It's just, the task is going to just be so hard. I just cannot do that which seems to lie before me to do. And it was a difficult thing. But the wagons were now provided. This was not only practical at the time, but it was an indication that all of their need was going to be met. And folks, as you and I look out into the autumn time, and we're so blessed in Northern Ireland to have the opportunities we have. Nobody hardly says anything to us for reaching out and for seeking to bring people into meetings and organize special meetings and children's meetings and all of that. But having said all of that, the task is immense. It's immense to reach out there, because the Bible tells us certain things about ourselves that shows us that participation is required. The Bible says that we are ambassadors. An ambassador is one who represents his country at the very highest level. And that is what you and I do. We represent the Lord, which is on a totally different level from anything else on earth that might be represented. We represent him to the men and women, to the needy men and women, and boys and girls of Northern Ireland. Speaking to a man just 2 days ago, he's not saved. He said to me, I don't know him that particularly well, but he came over to me and he said, where are you preaching? I said, Appalee. He's still in Appalee. Started talking to him and so on. He'd been brought up in a Christian home, not saved himself. His need is very great. Then another man in that particular place had come and was, I just spoke to him. I'd known him years ago. And then I had moved from where I was to a bit away from those men, and he came after me. And he says, I believe you're a minister now. And I said, yes, I've been a minister for 17 years, and that's what I'm doing now. It's a good while from running the Bible. He said, he actually turned around and said, he says, that is great. And there was another ungodly man. And all around us, men and women, there are those who need us to be ambassadors. The Bible also shows us we are light. There's a statement of fact there where the Lord says, ye are the light of the world and ye are the salt of the earth. It's not you can be. It's a statement of fact in the original. This is what you are. Now, your light can be hid, but you're still the light. Or your salt can lose its savor, but you're still the salt. And that is what we are. We're ambassadors, we're lights, we're witnesses, we're spokespersons for the Lord. And when it all adds up, you can feel, as I have felt so often in my life, this is a huge task. What is to be done? I'm not sure that I'm really able to do it. In fact, I feel that I can't really do it. Well, God is able to supply our every need. Just as Joseph and Pharaoh didn't say, you go and get your dad and all the household, you need to bring them back, whatever way you like. He provided the very necessary wagons. In fact, you will see, if you look later on there, you will see that these wagons, even to Joseph's father, showed him that there was something here that was real. In verse 23, they told him all the words of Joseph, that is the father, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons, which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Really here, he was seeing that someone had intervened. Someone had intervened. And just as Joseph had done that for his brothers, the Lord is able to do that for you and for I. Now, it is a battle. And why do we say that it is a battle? Because constantly you and I tend to look at self and figure out what sort of talent do I have. I heard a young girl the other day just in jest to her father, a young woman I know about 18, suppose she said she was doing something, and he said to her, can you do that? She says, when you're as multi-talented as I am, you can do anything. And then she just laughed and walked on. Of course, she was only joking. But there's not too many Christians who will look into their own heart and say, I'm so multi-talented that I can do anything. We constantly find ourselves looking to the Lord for help. And it's a battle. Because we may look at ourselves and look at our own heart and say, well, my spirit's been wounded. Somebody said something. Remember when Paul was writing to Timothy? And he said to Timothy to stir up the gift of God that is in thee. Why did he have to do that? Because he was dying. We have to face it. Timothy was dying. And he was dying, I believe, because of something that had happened. And he was able to get himself stirred up. It says there in that verse, wherefore, verse 6, chapter 1 in 2 Timothy, wherefore I put thee in remembrance that thou stir up the gift of God which is in thee. And the word stir there, meaning, as it refers to as you would kindle up a fire that seemed to be burning low. You would come along and you would kindle up the flames there. Well, if you compare that with what it says in 1 Timothy 4 and the verse 12, Paul had already said to Timothy, let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, or the word meaning in just general behavior, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. This is the advice that he given to him. Let no man despise thy youth. As though Paul had the discernment to know that someone might despise him because he was young. And they did. And he was down. And now Paul sent him again, stir up the gift of God that is within thee. Maybe someone out there, maybe not a Christian, maybe someone out in the world said something and it wounded your spirit and got you down. And you just feel that it's a battle to throw yourself into the work and to be a part of the work and to seek to do what you can for the Lord. Deep down you'd love to do it, but you feel my spirit's been wounded and I just can't bring myself to do it. Well, there's nothing new there. Because you live in a world that wounds spirits all the time. And we need the Lord continually to come alongside. Over there in the book of Philippians. And it's Philippians chapter 4. In the verse 13. Well, I'll look at verse 12 with you as well. Philippians chapter 4 verse 12. Paul is writing. He said, I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. In other words, he knew how to be full and to be in the crest of the wave, but he knew what it was to be down. And he knew what it was to keep plodding on when he was down. It says, everywhere and in all things I am instructed both to be full and to be hungry. Now the word instructed there is a word that it actually carries the meaning of led into the secret. It also carries the meaning of being initiated. So he's initiated here into this secret of how to be full. You and I love it when all is well and we're well received and everything's good. But when it's not like that, we don't perhaps love it as much. Paul learned the lesson. He said he learned here both how to be full and how to be hungry, how to abound and how to suffer need. Here was the answer in verse 13. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Indeed, over there in the book of Colossians, just where we are, chapter 1, says there in verse 29, he's talking here about people warning those who are out of Christ and teaching. But he says in verse 29, whereunto I also labor. He's trying to encourage them to labor. In other words, to participate, to be involved. Whereunto I also labor, striving. And the word striving, there's a word that refers to the agonizing of an athlete. Someone who is doing their utmost. They're putting every ounce of effort into it. Whether it is on the track or some other type of athletics, they're giving it everything that they have. That's really what he's saying here. Whereunto I also labor, striving according to his working. And then listen to this, which worketh in me mightily. That wasn't a boast that he was anybody special. That was giving the glory to the Lord. Which worketh in me mightily. That ties in with what I read earlier. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. In other words, it is God working mightily in him that enables him. And just remember this. God has often given very big tasks to small people. You remember Gideon and the very, very formidable army that he was to face. And initially there were some 32,000 people. And that was too many for the Lord to use. And the Lord whittled that down to Gideon was just left with 300 men. And it was those 300 that the Lord chose. I remember seeing in a banner there on the 12th, one of the people had on their banner, and the picture that was on the banner, it said, Gideon's chosen few. These were really the Lord's chosen few. And wherever you are, if you were a person in a big city church with a, not that all city churches have big congregations, but if it did have, then you would need to be looking for the Lord there to show you what you would have to do. But in a small work, the Lord is still able to use you. And we still need to look to him to show us what to do and to help us and, as it were, to supply the wagons for us. How are we going to do it? How are you going to change the minds of the people in Achillea and Ballindarry? You've reached them before, you've talked to them, you've prayed for them, you've witnessed to them, you've even had them in the meetings from time to time. Made no difference. How are you going to change it all? This is the answer. Look to the Lord. Look to the Lord to supply the wagons, to supply for us the strength and the wisdom and the ability to keep doing it over and over again, to keep reaching out to men and women as though we had never reached them before. And as though they were hearing the gospel for the very first time. That is the participation here that was required. These men were not to be onlookers, but rather there was a participation that was required. They were to go and take their father and the households and to come to him, and they were to take these wagons with them. But there's not only the participation here required, there is, secondly, the parting that was recognized. If you look at verse 20, the very beginning, it says also, regard not your stuff. Regard not your stuff. In the original Hebrew language, it literally means, and let not your eye have pity upon your vessels. It carries that kind of meaning. In other words, don't look upon your stuff as something which has a great grip on you. There's a reference here to household implements and so on. And the thought really is, they're going to be used to familiarity where they were and to routine. And you could even say to favorite places. When we were boys and girls, sometimes we had favorite places. And they were now to come and to serve him. They were to bring themselves and their households into the land of Canaan. And what a battle there was here. How easy it would be for them to think when they got back home to Canaan, oh, I just love to be staying here. Home is always good. Remember a missionary lady one night, and she's very honest in what she's saying about all the struggles of eventually going into missionary work. The Lord had led her her husband to do various things in God's work, and then one thing after another, until it came to a point where they felt he was definitely leading them into missionary work. And she says, the biggest thing for me, she says, definitely the house. She says, I just got everything in the house the way I wanted, and as ladies like to have houses like that. Just got everything the way I wanted, and I had to turn my back upon it all. I had to look back. I had to turn my back upon it all. And the party here that would be recognized, but they're told very clearly, regard not your stuff. Don't let it have a hold upon you. And really, there's a message there for us as well. The Lord will not call most people to be missionaries. But very often, he will be looking this for an hour or two. As we list out there for Tuesday night, can you spare an hour? And really, that is what he was looking for from most of us. And with life being so busy for so many people, it's very, very easy to not have that hour or that hour and a half that we can give. Sadly, for some, even Sunday's too busy to come to church. But we're not speaking to people today who don't come to church. We're speaking of those who do come. But there's something the Lord would have you to do. Maybe it's just to attend the meetings. And that is, you're doing an awful lot by doing that and by praying at home. Maybe you're genuinely the type of person, you just couldn't involve yourself in this sort of thing. But for the like of me, and for many others here too, we have to look beyond what we might want to be doing ourselves. I'm speaking here about being selfless, and you have to do that in God's work. There's no other way around it. There's a man saying to me just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to him, and he says, you know what I'm doing? He says, it's very, very hard. What he was doing is very, very difficult. And I said, I know that. I know it is. But I said, we've never, ever been told that it was going to be easy. Never been told that it was going to be easy. And it can be a real battle in getting ourselves disciplined to that point where we think, well, there's that hour, I can give that to the Lord. Or there's an hour and a half, I can do something for God during that time. And folks, that is really sometimes what we have to do, to put self out. Less me time, that's really it. And that is really what is required if we want to do something in the work of the Lord. And very easily, the ties of what we are doing can hold us back from that as well. But that's just a shorter point there, the parting that is recognised. We really appreciate everything you do, or anything you do in the work. I mean that. Even the making of the tea the other week, we mentioned this morning, all of that. And we understand that it's difficult to get time. But the work needs us. The work needs us to try and do what we can. And these men, they were told very clearly, regard not your stuff. In other words, when you go back home, don't be thinking, oh, it's easier here. It's easier here. This world and the whole system wants to take the easy way out of everything. Christians can't do that. And sometimes it's tough going. And that is what was required, to regard not the stuff. But notice also here concerning these people and what they were. There is a trade here that was repulsed. A trade that was repulsed. If you look in chapter 46 and look with me please in verse 34. We're looking here. Now, here's his brothers. That ye shall say, they were to say this about themselves. And that ye shall say, thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth, even until now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is abomination to the Egyptians. The word abomination there means to loathe something and to reject it. And yet if you look there at verses 31 and 32 of that same chapter. And Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and show Pharaoh and say unto him, my brethren and my father's house, which were in the land of Canaan, are come to me, and the men are shepherds. For their trade hath been to feed cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. In other words, there's no way that they were going to hide what they were in order that it might seem to be more acceptable to some people. They were shepherds, yes. They were an abomination unto the Egyptians. They're going to be living there now. And they were still going to be very clearly known as those who were shepherds. In fact, if you look at chapter 43 there, just back a page or two in verse 32, it says, "And they sat on him by himself, and for them by themselves, for the Egyptians which did eat with him and themselves by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination unto the Egyptians." It seemed that everything was against them. What if people totally reject them, and they don't like what their trade was? They were shepherds. They don't like them to fellowship with them. They don't want anything really to do with them. I'm sure the thought was in their mind, what if they hate us? You're our brother. It's okay for you. And you love us. But what if the rest of them, what if they don't like us? There was a trade that was repulsed. This was another battle. They had the battle to face of leaving what they loved. That was the parting that was recognized. They had the participation. That was a battle as well. But now there's the trade. That's another battle. We all like to be liked. But in reality, overall, the gospel presented in this country now is a loathed trade. If you present the gospel in all its fullness, explaining to men and women that they are sinners, and no matter how carefully and lovingly you do that to men and women, they will not like your message. They will not like your message. In most instances, they will not want to hear. You've heard it said before, the world is waiting. We need missionaries. So we do. What way are they waiting? Are they waiting with open arms for you to go and train in the Bible college and go out to be a missionary? No, they're not. In the vast majority of instances, they're not waiting that way at all. But they're waiting in the sense that they need to hear. That's the way that they're waiting. They're waiting in the sense that they need to hear. And they may have felt, well, we're going as something, as people that really are not wanted. Remember the Lord Jesus. It's always good to remember him. The apostle said to consider him lest you become faint and weary in your mind. And the word faint there means to lose out. To consider him and what he suffered. Remember when he healed the man of Gadara, that man that they couldn't do anything with, and he made him into a trophy of grace, so much so that he wanted to go with the Lord and to help him, but the Lord had sent him to work among his own people and told him to stay at home. But whenever the Lord had done that great work and they saw what had happened, it says that they sought the Lord to depart from their coasts. After all that he'd done, they didn't want him. They just wanted rid of him. Because his presence there would remind them of their sin. And most people, most Christians, are nice, personable people when they're serving the Lord. Most of them are. And I know that some people have said to me before, but so-and-so is a Christian, I never want to be one. You hear that from time to time. There's nothing you can do about it. But most Christians are nice, personable people. Well, so was Christ. He was a nice person. And they sought him to depart out of their coasts. And it'll not be a surprise to us if we seek to win in men and women and boys and girls from Ballanderry and Achillea, and they just tell you not so many words that they don't want anything to do with it. They don't want anything to do with it. What the message you have is not a popular message today. By and large, it's not a message that people are sending for. But that is our message. The message of saving grace and redeeming love. And it can be a great battle to keep going. Personally, it can be a great battle. So you can see now, as you want the battle on and serve the Lord, there'll be the battle of discipline and trying to get some time to give that time to serving the Lord. There'll be the battle of participation, being involved at all because you think, oh, I'm so weak and I can't do anything. There will be the battle of going with the message that you know men and women don't really want to hear. But there'll also be the battle here for these men of trusting Joseph. Trusting Joseph. They had to completely trust in him. I'm sure they were wondering, would he keep his word? Well, when they look back into history, even just a little bit, he kept his word before. They had not lost their way while they followed his instructions. He had showed great care for them personally. So the message was very plain. Serve me. Serve Joseph. And enjoy the best. It says there, the fat of the land. And folks, you and I have to trust him. The word is the Lord's. Sometimes you hear of great meetings with lots and lots of people there, and some so many people have got saved and all. Sure, we know all that, and that's really, really encouraging. But you can't save anyone. And neither can I. And if the Lord were to decide he could save this whole village. We have to continually look to him and trust him that we're doing the right thing and going forward there with his work. And in many ways, Christians find themselves in the same position as Moses was long ago. And it says concerning him in Hebrews 11, he was well schooled in everything in Egypt. He was a man of military ability. He was well respected. But it says in verse 25 in Hebrews 11 that he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ. He knew all about it. He knew that if he left there, things were going to change. Because the life that he would live, the message that he would have, was not something that was going to go down well with people. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. And by faith, he forsook Egypt. It wasn't all set before him there and showing him exactly what would happen and how good it would be and when things would work and when they wouldn't. It says, by faith, he forsook Egypt. He just headed out and followed after the Lord because he wanted to battle on with him. It said, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who was invisible. It is a great privilege, ladies and gentlemen, to be involved in God's work in any way. And in any way that we can, let us give ourselves wholeheartedly to the task. To battle on with him. These are dark days, and I know that many, many Christians are becoming discouraged across this country and even despondent because of that. But we want to battle on. And as we do that, we face these battles. The battle of participation. Don't look to yourself, look to the Lord. He will give you the ability. The battle of parting with that time, that's me time, and giving it to the Lord a wee bit. See what we can do for him. The battle of going forth with a message that people don't want to hear. And the battle of trusting him who's promised to bless his word. We do thank you for listening, and we trust that what we said will help you, even as we soon get into the winter's work.